Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Voter Protection Program press briefing conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. Please note this call may be recorded. I will be standing by should you need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn today's conference over to Joanna Lidgate, the National Director of Voter Protection Program. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much. We have a fantastic group of state attorneys general with us today, current and former, from both parties to reflect on what we're seeing right now in the Supreme Court. But just by way of background, earlier this week, the Texas Attorney General, Ken Paxton, filed a lawsuit seeking to throw out the lawfully cast ballots of voters in Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. The next day, 17 attorneys general in states won by Trump filed an amicus brief asking the Supreme Court to take up Paxton's suit. That number went up to 18 last night with the addition of the state of Alaska. We want to be really clear about what's happening here. Texas and these other states want to intervene in another state's election and throw out the votes of roughly 20 million Americans. That's honestly shocking and unprecedented. But I do want to acknowledge the Republicans who are standing up on the side of American voters and refusing to rubber stamp this irresponsible lawsuit. There are a number of Republican leaders who've spoken out against it, including the Georgia Attorney General, Chris Carr, a Republican and a named defendant in the case, and other Republican colleagues, including the AGs in Idaho, Kentucky, New Hampshire, Ohio, and Wyoming, who also refused to join Paxton's suit. We really hope that other leaders will continue to step up to defend our democracy. And I just also want to say a word briefly about the issue of public safety, because as you all know, many attorneys general serve as the chief law enforcement officer for their state. And across the country, we're seeing the repercussions of the lies that the president is peddling about the election, which this Texas case embraces and amplifies. That misinformation campaign is leading to violence, to threats, harassment of our election officials, from extremists who refuse to accept the election results. And why should they when the president himself doesn't? So I'm going to hand things over now to A.G. Racine to share an overview of the brief he led with 23 attorneys general seeking the dismissal of the baseless Texas case. But I also just want to note that we have Lauren Ali Khan, who's the Solicitor General in the D.C. AG's office, also on the line, and Ambassador Norm Eisen, who's our outside counsel at the Voter Protection Program, on the line, and both of them can help answer questions about this and other litigation during the Q&A. So, A.G. Racine.
Thank you so much, Joanna. And it's a pleasure to be here with the Voter Protection Program under National Director Joanna Lidgate's leadership, has done an extraordinary job of defending America's democracy in a bipartisan manner. Boy, do we miss bipartisan support for our democracy. 50 years ago, in a Supreme Court case called Powell v. McCormick, the United States Supreme Court declared a rather unremarkable holding. Here it is. A fundamental principle of our representative democracy is that the people should choose whom they please to govern them. Indeed, the people have chosen. But Texas, supported by now 18 other states, asked this court, the Supreme Court, to overturn that choice. Those states urge the United States Supreme Court to exercise its extraordinary power under the Constitution to control the conduct of one state at the suit of another, by nullifying millions of lawful votes and voiding the result of a free and fair election. The District of Columbia and my exceptional Solicitor General, Lauren Ali Khan, together with the states and territories, 22 other states, and you know who they are, submitted a brief to the United States Supreme Court, and frankly, we worked in less than 24 hours to do so, in support of the four defendant states. Amicus states urge the United States Supreme Court to reject Texas's last-minute attempt to throw out the results of an election decided by the people and securely overseen and certified by its sister states. First, you should know that the United States Supreme Court has long recognized that it will only exercise original jurisdiction, the basis of Texas's complaint, on a showing of the seriousness and dignity of the claim, and the lack of another forum where there is jurisdiction. Here, as we know, the underlying legal claims Texas belatedly seeks to litigate before the United States Supreme Court can be, and indeed have been, litigated and thus far lost in alternative forums where facts have been developed and issues aired, subject to the United States Supreme Court's ordinary certiorari review. Put another way, the court, the United States Supreme Court, has no reason to accept the unusual and extraordinary relief that Texas is seeking. Moreover, the claimed threat that Texas says, they call it an invasion of its own rights, is certainly neither serious nor established by clear and convincing evidence. Additionally, the law is absolutely clear that the Elector's Clause provides no basis to second-guess state courts and local actors in their interpretation of state law. Finally, there is no doubt that the exercise of states' common sense measures taken in response to an unprecedented pandemic cannot at all be used to introduce widespread fraud, and let me note, fraud that has not been established. With that, I look forward to your questions at the end, and as I indicated, Lauren Alakhan, the Solicitor General of the District of Columbia, is prepared to answer the legal questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much, A.G. Racine. And we have two attorneys general from two of the states that are named in Attorney General Paxton's lawsuit. We're going to hear first from Attorney General Josh Call of the great state of Wisconsin.
Thank you very much, Joanna, for organizing this call. Thank you to everybody who's joining us. And it's a privilege to be here with a couple of my current colleagues, AGs Racine and Nessel, as well as two former AGs. I want to talk a little bit about what's happening on the ground with these cases right now, where things are headed, and to sort of step back and talk a bit about the moment we're in here. So first, as to what's going on the ground, in Wisconsin, as in many of the battleground states, there have been multiple lawsuits that have been filed. There was a hearing in federal court yesterday in Wisconsin regarding one of the cases. That was before a judge appointed by President Trump. There was a hearing in federal court in front of a different judge the day before, and that judge that evening dismissed a challenge. There is a proceeding going on right now in state circuit court in Wisconsin, and that's a case that originally had been filed with our state Supreme Court. And our state Supreme Court has had original actions filed before it as well. It's really critical to emphasize the point that AG Racine made, which is that in not a single one of those multiple cases has anybody argued that the results of the election were impacted by fraud. So these challenges fundamentally are not a challenge to the will of the voters as expressed in this election. They're not arguing that Donald Trump won a majority of votes that were cast in Wisconsin. The president's currently involved in three separate legal actions challenging the results in Wisconsin. One, the Supreme Court case. Two, a case that is pending in federal court, the one that was heard yesterday. And then number three, this case that's being heard in state court today. In each of these cases, the president and his supporters are going to lose. These are not legally meritorious cases, and they're not close cases. The fact that these cases are dragging on is a product not of the fact that there is any legal question as to who's going to win these cases. It's just that the president and his allies continue to engage in what has really become abusive litigation. They have lost dozens of cases around the country between the president and his supporters. So in the days ahead, these cases will be rejected. The Electoral College will meet, and it will certify the results in a way that reflects the will of the voters. I have every confidence that that will happen. But I'm also deeply disturbed about what we've seen, especially in the past few days, because we have seen a shift from an effort that has involved the president and some of his supporters to an effort that now involves the majority of Republican AGs in the country, as well as over 100 members of Congress. It's important to emphasize how cynical this effort is, because elected officials are very well aware of how our elected processes work. They know how rare fraud is in our system, and they know that the results that we have reflect the will of the voters. You know, some of the people who signed on to these challenges were members of Congress in the states where these elections took place. I have not yet heard from anybody that they're going to refuse to take the seat that they've been elected to because of their concerns about the integrity of the election. But if somebody did think that they were elected in an election that was fraudulent or improper, I assume that they wouldn't take their seat. But that's not what we're seeing. It's one of the many reasons we know that what we're seeing is not a serious effort, but a cynical effort to challenge the results of the election. That is a red alert warning for our democracy, because these arguments that are being made are extreme and they're anti-democratic. What is being asked for here, and A.G. Racine made this point, is for the votes cast in four states for president not to count, and instead to have politicians, state legislatures, determine whom their states support for president. In other words, people are unhappy with the decision of voters, and these elected officials are attempting to have not the losing candidate, but rather the voters replaced. That is the reasoning of dictatorship, not democracy. And it has to be soundly rejected, not only in this case, but as we move forward. Hopefully, looking at this moment, we will use this as a jumping off point for strengthening our democracy, for enhancing our protections for the right to vote. I hope we will see the Voting Rights Act reaffirmed and passed through Congress. I think it is time to pass a constitutional amendment that expressly provides for the right to vote. And we need to do more beyond that to build on our system as well, like passing legislation that prohibits partisan gerrymandering in our states. So I hope that everybody on this call is aware of both how unserious the claims that are being made in court are, legally speaking, but how dangerous they are and how serious they are from the standpoint of the health of our democracy. So again, it is a privilege to join this august group, and thank you for having me as a part of it.
Thank you so much, A.G. Call. So well put. I'm going to turn it over now to Attorney General Dana Nessel of Michigan.
Thanks, Joanna. And I echo the sentiments of my colleagues, A.G. Call and Racine, and of course the statements that Joanna's made on behalf of the VPP. I don't think I can say it any better than has already been said. And I will say a little bit about the fact that I feel like sometimes righteous indignation is my brand, but I honestly take no joy at all in what we are here discussing today. I believe this case is an affront to our system of elections. It's an affront to our democracy in its entirety. And, you know, this is how democracies die, by virtue of these types of actions, which are unprecedented in American history. Clearly, this case is without merit. Texas has no standing. There is no injury to the state of Texas. Nothing that has happened in my state, in the state of Michigan, would add or remove a single electoral vote for Texas, and Texas has no entitlement to any of Michigan's votes. It is not pie. Texas has entirely failed to identify even a single Michigan voter who voted but should not have, let alone any evidence of widespread election fraud. Now, our election has been certified, and that has been upheld by every state and federal court in which there has been the challenge, and there have been many. But despite these attacks, attack after attack, vicious disinformation that's been disseminated and has been designed to undermine our system of elections, you know, the certification will be withheld. These claims are totally unsupported, and this original action in the Supreme Court is just an unprecedented vehicle for any of this. If the relief Texas is seeking is granted, it is the end of democracy in the United States of America, and that is not hyperbole. It's just a fact. So I would suggest that it is long past time for this sad and terrifying chapter in American history to come to an end, and for the Supreme Court to soundly reject and dispose of this action.
Thanks, A.G. Nessel. We're going to hear next from two former attorneys general. We're lucky to have both of them as members of our bipartisan advisory board here at the VPP. First up is Jonna Lindemus, who served as the independent attorney general of Alaska. She's also the author of a powerful op-ed on this Texas lawsuit published yesterday in the Anchorage Daily News. A.G. Lindemus.
Good morning, and thank you, Joanna, for organizing this. You know, I am nonpartisan, but as a former attorney general in a very conservative state, I'm a strong believer in states' rights. Trying to undermine another state's election simply because you do not like the outcome is not a conservative value. I've joined with these very same attorneys generals who are putting forth these arguments on states' rights issues, and I've joined with them because it's the right outcome. But these Republican AGs who usually recognize that state sovereignty is guaranteed by our Constitution are in fact undermining state sovereignty. Texas certainly wouldn't like it if Alaska tried to interfere in its election. It's not a conservative value. It's also not an American value. Even Attorney General Barr has acknowledged that there's no evidence of significant voter fraud. Absent such evidence, continuing to attack the election is undemocratic and dangerous. It's really disappointing, and I find that really disappointing for this state in Alaska that's now joined. It's really disappointing to see the pressure that is being applied to the leaders, including the Attorney General here in Alaska, to do something that is so clearly political. We are a nation of laws and values, and this is not one of our laws or by our values.
Thanks so much, A.G. Lindemus. And last but not least, we have Tom Rath, the former Attorney General of New Hampshire, former chair of the New Hampshire Republican Party. And A.G. Rath also served as director of the Legal Services Corporation under President George H.W. Bush. A.G. Rath.
Thank you very much, and I'm honored to join my colleagues who are on this call today who are serving their states and the overall democracy with such distinction and quality. First of all, as a former Attorney General, I really applaud those colleagues who are serving today as Attorney General for their courage and their wisdom in terms of not caving to the political pressure of the moment to do something which might have in certain quarters some political advantage for them. The Idaho AG said, and I think absolutely correct, our job is not about doing what's politically expedient. Our job is doing what's legally required and is right. As state leaders, we have to see that the rule of law is not applied once in a while, but all the time. And that's why, to me, I was really pleased to see 23 other state attorneys general step up yesterday and push back on the suit. I am personally very glad that one of them is my friend Gordon McDonald in New Hampshire, who also resisted that temptation. This country has come through a very difficult time, and still is going through a difficult time, in which dissension and upset and controversy has raged day in and day out. And what an election should do is allow us to have a moment where we take our breath and look forward. And the election should be a moment in which we accept the collective judgment of all of our citizens and accept that and say, all right, that's the path we've chosen and that's the path we've got to go down. I think it's very unfortunate, and I think probably will ultimately and I think speedily be rejected by the court, that some people try to turn that, live off that chaos, perpetuate it, and make it even more difficult for the average citizen to trust what government's doing. That's very unfortunate. It's absolutely contrary to the job that they have. One of the cases I had many, many years ago was the Wyman-Durkin race in New Hampshire, which is a United States Senate race that came down to two votes. And the case was litigated before the state processes and then went to the United States Senate, which was the ultimate judge of the elections and qualifications of its members. And they couldn't decide it. And they sent it back to New Hampshire. And what they said was, vote again. They didn't say, we're going to impose our will over your will. And it was a democratically controlled Congress at that time. They came back in New Hampshire, voted. We know how to run elections. The people who run elections on a daily basis, who are in those halls and hand out the ballots and check the IDs, these are people who are good, solid citizens who are making a contribution way beyond the free coffee and sandwiches that they might get on election day. The idea that somehow that process could be prostituted or diverted in the way that this lawsuit would tend to suggest is absolutely ludicrous and outside the reasonable ambit of political discussion. I think it's very, very unfortunate to be to this, and I'm delighted to see that as Attorney General, there is a commonly held belief that the laws of the states and the will of the people have to be recognized. Having said that, I think what will happen here is this lawsuit will eventually go the way it should go, which is no further. But what I want to do is to make sure that coming out of this, the respect and confidence that American citizens rightly have in their electoral process doesn't suffer. And that to me would be the ultimate downside of this litigation. And people who brought it should really consider that wrong and that harm they're doing to this country by sowing those seeds of doubt. That's why I'm very pleased to join you all, and I'm very pleased that the Attorneys General on this call and elsewhere are saying, really reinforcing the confidence that we should have in a process that works. Thank you.
Thank you so much, A.G. Rath. We're going to turn it over now for questions. And as I mentioned at the outset, we have, in addition to our four speakers, we have our outside counsel, Norm Eisen, and D.C. Solicitor General Lauren Ali Khan on to answer any legal questions as well.
At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, that is star and one on your phone. We will pause a moment to allow questions to queue. And we will take our first question from Ronald Brownstein with The Atlantic. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yes. Good morning, everybody. Ron Brownstein from The Atlantic. First question would like to ask sort of two questions. For Tom Rath, I would like to ask his interpretation of what it means that so many Republican attorneys general and House members have, as well as the Senate candidates in Georgia, in a state that would be disenfranchised, have signed on to this litigation. And for the AGs in Michigan and Wisconsin, I'm just wondering, if the court somehow rules in favor of Texas, would you expect the House to accept a slate of electors that would be put forward under some alternative process? So I'd like to In other words, would the Supreme Court be the last word on this, even if they come down for Texas? So those are my two questions. My apologies for two.
Thanks so much. AG Rath, you want to take it first?
Sure. I think every AG has got to make their own decision as to on any lawsuit as to what is the appropriate legal response to the lawsuit. I think those folks who decided to go in a different direction are wrong. And they may make those decisions not on the basis of what the law says, but what they interpret the politics of the moment to be said. I don't want to impute that motivation to anybody. But the fact is, the law on this is not in doubt. It's very, very clear. And so as opposed to any other reason, I understand that there are political ramifications for this, and this is a very, very controversial and hard political moment. And I think it's unfortunate that they made that decision, but I'm also encouraged that so many went the other way, and I think the court will justify that when they rule on this.
This is Joanna. I would just add to that, in addition to the Republican AGs who I mentioned earlier have put country over party and law over politics by not signing the brief, we've also seen strong statements from Republican leaders like Senator Mitt Romney, Senator John Cornyn, and of course, Governor Gary Herbert and the governor-elect as well in Utah. So we do see Republicans speaking up, and we certainly hope there will be more of them in the days ahead. AG Call, AG Nessel, do you want to answer the second part of the question?
Is the Supreme Court the last word?
Yeah, I'm happy to give some thoughts. So first, we think about this in the context of this particular challenge, but this is a legal argument that's being made that would have repercussions for every election. And so I think it's important to look at both of those things here, because what it would do if the Supreme Court were to rule for the challengers here, and to be clear, that is absolutely not going to happen, so this really is a hypothetical, it would throw the democratic process into total chaos. It would basically throw out the rules that we have for deciding elections, which are that the voters decide who wins, and instead give that power to politicians. And then it becomes chaos, really. The state legislatures would need to act, and then Congress would need to make a decision about what it should do. It's notable that under the safe harbor deadline and the rules that it provides, this election is effectively already decided. Wisconsin is the only state that doesn't have electors selected in a way that ensures that the safe harbor deadline was met, because there's an ongoing challenge pursuant to our state's election challenge processes. But every other state has been resolved. So, if Congress were to follow the law in that case, even then you'd have this clear result. But, long term, saying that the votes don't control the outcome in this case would, A.G. Nessel made this point before about the death of democracy. I mean, we would be talking about presidential elections in the United States of America no longer being decided by the voters if the Supreme Court were to issue that kind of ruling. And that is just unthinkable. So the answer is there would be chaos, but I'm also certain that we're not going to go that route.
I wonder if A.G. Nessel has any thought about whether a Supreme Court decision would be the final word, or whether Congress should reject an alternative slate that they essentially might empower if they rule for Texas.
Sorry, I was on mute. It's hard for me to say, in that, I can only look at what the law requires now and has always required. And of course, there is a requirement that that our electors be reflected in terms of the vote, which has been certified, and that federal law requires Congress to acknowledge our state's electors, and our 16 electors properly have been chosen for Joe Biden. And so I guess what you're asking me in terms of what potentially could happen with a Supreme Court decision that undermines the will of the voters of my state, I guess I've given as much thought to that as I have you know, what will happen if a meteor hits the city of Detroit. I mean, I haven't thought of it because I've never contemplated that it could actually occur, and I'm still exceedingly hopeful that it won't. So if you're asking what is your plan, what do you expect you'll do, I expect that the Supreme Court will do what they are obligated to do. I expect that our state legislature will do the same, and I expect that Congress will, you know, they took an oath, and they took an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America, and I expect them to abide by that oath.
And Ron, it's Norm Eisen. I'll just jump in to how are you? I'll just jump in to emphasize the Supreme Court is not going to do what Texas wants. There's been a long pattern over 50 cases of complete legal futility, and this is the most absurd of that more than 50 cases. If the Supreme Court were going to intervene, it would have chosen a previous vehicle. There are a number that are already on the docket. They have passed on that. They passed on the Kelly case, also a ridiculous piece of litigation, but not as ridiculous as A.G. Paxson's actions. The National Archivist has logged certificates of ascertainment from all of the states. The Safe Harbor and the other provisions of the Electoral Count Act don't come into play in this scenario. There just is no question that there's no issue about the choice the American people made of electors. There's no question about which electors will meet in the Electoral College in all of the states, and there's no serious doubt that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are going to take office on January 20th. The important question to ask is, given the fact that everyone knows that, why are the president and his allies, like A.G. Paxson, continuing to attack our democracy? It's incredibly dangerous, and it's the same pattern of presidential a betrayal of duty and abuse of power that we've seen throughout his administration. And it starts with the hundreds of millions of dollars he's garnering from the election and Mr. Paxson's own personal legal problems. It is absolutely reprehensible. It is not going to change the outcome of the presidential election.
Do we have any other questions?
And we will take our next question from Mala T. Barrett and with M Live. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Thank you. This is a question for Attorney General Nestle. I'm wondering if your office has identified any threats against Michigan's 16 electors, considering all the kind of protest activity that we've seen around the election result.
No, fortunately.
And we will take our next question from Nick Corsati with New York Times. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, all. Thank you so much for doing this. My question is for Attorney General Rath. You know, as a longtime counselor to Republican presidential candidates in the past, I was just wondering what you make of the party's position here and the fact that, you know, major elements of the Republican Party apparatus have kind of backed this effort all the way up until this court case.
Well, some of them actually won that I advised. I have to add this caveat. I think we're in a very bad place as a party. We've lost, and I don't want to drag anybody else in this call into this position, but my view is that what's happened here in the last 4 years is not good for the long-term future of the party. And I think the party will come to a kind of a rude awakening and reorganization of itself as it goes forward from this moment. There's a whole part of this party that I think feels not represented by what frankly happened in Washington and particularly around President Trump. And I think we're going to have to sort that out. It's not going to be pretty or easy. So we're going to have to sort it out and get the party back to where we can be a meaningful participant in the political process. That's going to take some time.
Right. Does it seem, though, that it's kind of becoming an anti-small D Democratic Party seeking to throw out all of these votes?
If you're asking me, I couldn't hear you. Would you repeat that?
Oh, sorry. I said, but the lawsuit and the kind of position it's taking to disenfranchise so many, does it seem like it's, you know, easing into anti-small-D Democratic positions?
I'm sorry. I if you're asking, I did not hear, but so maybe send it for someone else.
Hi there. This is Attorney General Carl Racine. I'll take a stab at your question, and if I miss it, I'll go ahead and make additional comment. Look, of course, what they're seeking to do is entirely anti-democratic, as been set forth in the 23-state brief, as has been amplified emphatically by AG Messel and AG Call. And what it is, frankly, a complete disregard for what our country stands for, why we're unique, why we are, at least at this point, still, albeit declining, admired in the world. And as to our Republican colleagues on the AG side, I really believe, and I'm just speaking for myself here, you know, that it's not a one-size-fit-all characterization as to what's going on with them. There's a group that is completely anti-democratic and wants to win because they believe they should run the country, and who cares about the Constitution? I don't know how many they are, but it certainly sounds like the author of the complaint to the Supreme Court fits that bill. There's another group that has been mercilessly, relentlessly coerced and pressured. And they unfortunately seem to be yielding to the corrosive power of Donald Trump. Now, I wish that those AG would actually look to Lawrence Wasden of Idaho, AG Carr of Georgia, the AG of New Hampshire, Gordon McDonald, and the other four Republican AG who just absolutely refuse to join this anti-democratic attack. But the truth is that human beings, and we've seen this throughout the Trump administration, are frail. Our checks and balances that we thought would hold our democracy strong, we learned are only as good as the people empowered to invoke them and protect our country's principles. Our people are frail, and now we know subject to political coercion, bullying, etc. But there is a saving grace, and I'm going to point out two distinct groups. The first, judges. We've seen federal courts, state court judges, and I'm very confident, as my colleagues are, that we'll see this from the United States Supreme Court, rebuff the notion that there is something called a Trump judge, an Obama judge. No, these judges take an oath, and their job is to follow the law. The other group I want to point out is the group of attorneys general who are Democratic, because the record will reflect, far from being wildly partisan, quick to fire lawsuits without any basis, the Democratic attorneys general who have sued President Trump at least 139 times have won 80% of the cases that have been resolved. Now, what does that mean? That means that judges who were appointed by Republican presidents and judges who have been appointed by Democratic presidents have overwhelmingly, 80%, found the president's legal positions to be without legal merit. And that's what happens when you have a president and an administration that is lawless and shows no respect for basic process and, again, law. So I'm thankful that the United States Supreme Court will end this in a manner in which it should be ended when baseless claims are contrived without law or fact and put before them. I can't wait for that to happen.
This is Joanna. I'm just going to add, because we have such an incredible bipartisan group of leaders at the Voter Protection Program, you know, this truly is not and should not be an issue of partisan politics. State attorneys general take an oath, as do all lawyers and all public servants, to uphold the Constitution. And to me, this is really about staying true to that oath. It's about putting law over politics. It's about putting country over party. And it's about serving the people of their states. And we all know how many pressing issues are facing us in this country right now, rebuilding our economy, beating this virus, and bringing our country back together. So we expect the Supreme Court will throw this case out quickly, and we hope all of our leaders will turn to those important priorities.
We would like to thank everyone for their questions, and we will now take it back to Joanna for the closing remarks.
I'm actually going to turn it over to my partner, Norm Eisen, for the last word.
We want to thank the current and former attorneys general. I will note of both parties for their comments and participation today and for their leadership in this challenging time and throughout their careers. We want to note that American democracy and the rule of law is strong. It has withstood these challenges. And the system, thanks to the guidance of those in both parties and the good people in Congress who refuse to go along from both parties, and the AGs who refuse to go along with General Paxson's suit, and so many others across the country, irrespective of party affiliation. Our rule of law is strong. Our democracy is strong. Of course, there will be other drama. There will be more sound and fury, but it will signify nothing. A die has been cast by the American people expressing their will. In a democracy, as we often say, to quote one of the judges who rejected a meritless case by the Trump campaign, the voters pick their leaders, not vice versa. So VPP will continue to be available to answer questions. We expect continued dramatic events, even if they are not ultimately meaningful in terms of the outcome of the election. And we're available to all of you, not only on our press calls, but as you may have individual questions for us, please reach out anytime through our outstanding
press team. With that, we thank you for being with us, and we look forward to visiting with you again very soon. Thanks very much, everyone.
And Norm, I believe we have breaking news from Wisconsin where another judge has dismissed a lawsuit by the Trump campaign. So everyone should keep an eye out for that.